Hello, everybody. Welcome to the first episode of the Football Road podcast. This is season two of from where we left off with Manchester United. This season brings with it a lot of excitement. We have a whole new panel, a completely new team of fresh correspondents across various clubs, various leagues, bringing with them their expertise, bringing with them their experience, and of course, nuance and analysis to go with it. We're very excited to welcome Rohin Punjabi, who is going to be our Arsenal and Barcelona correspondent in this journey. So welcome, Rohin, to the Football Road family.
We are joined also by Advait, our in-house Manchester City correspondent and also a pillar of the Football Road family. We're also joined by Rushab, a generalist, and of course, another huge pillar and strength of the Football Road podcast.
And what it really means for the football fraternity as a whole. I do think from a personal viewpoint that this is probably Pep's greatest achievement. He took over this project in 2016 after his perceived failed stint at Bayern Munich. He came in, he had, of course, the resources at his feet, but to do what he has done today is the culmination, and he has reached the football pinnacle after winning in Istanbul yesterday. So we're going to go right into it. Just a couple of interesting statistics. Pep has won 35 trophies as a manager. He is winning a trophy every single time he steps onto the pitch. And interestingly, he wins a trophy every 23 games, which is quite stunning. So we're going to start with Rushab first. Rusha, what does this City treble mean? How monumental of an achievement even is this? And what does this mean for the rest of us? Should we even hope for anything else?
I think I'll start off with the last bit of your question, which was the what does this mean for the rest of us and should we even hope? I think, off camera, there's a lot of people within our group of correspondents that are of the opinion that this is just the beginning of City's era of dominance. Like, that this is in no way... Like, this is not like the peak. Like, it's just going to keep going, and the Premier League is going to be more of a monopoly than it's ever been before. I think the peak of, you know, monopolization in the Premier League has been this, where, like, you know, City have won 5 of the last 6 league titles. They have their 3 in the row. They have the treble. All of this has been done before by United. Anything more than this in this era for Man City will be something unprecedented, something not seen before. And I think, although I think that it isn't as set in stone that, you know, City are probably going to run away with the league next year, I don't think that's as set in stone as people are saying. But I do believe that it will require a lot of effort from the rest of the Premier League. So you say you have Arsenal, for example, who was second this year in the league. I think they will have to do a lot to maintain their high standards. And I'm sure they will. I think they're making good moves in the transfer market. But I think the likes of Liverpool, Arsenal, United are going to have to make monumental efforts to keep up with City. If you ask for like a very early premature prediction right now, I would hope that City are not able to run away the league next year as well. And I would think it won't happen just because it is just so hard to do it 4 times in a row. But I definitely think that the rest of the league, and in terms of the UCL, the rest of Europe, really needs to step their game up in order to make sure that City don't just dominate every tournament they're in. Because the way they're going, with the average age of their squad, the players they have, the coach they have, who doesn't look like he's going anywhere, it's going to be very hard for anyone to really compete, especially in England.
No, that's a fair point, Rushab. And, you know, that's a great segue into, you know, my next question, which is to Rohin. Rohin, you've followed Arsenal throughout this Premier League journey. They were on top for 93% of the league season. They did everything that they can to give the City side a fight, and they still lost with 3 games to go. From your perspective, how difficult is it to really beat this monster of a side? What does it feel to be at the receiving end of a Premier League season that was so promising, but yet, again, it was Pep who ended up on the right side of things?
I mean, it's honestly a little worrisome when you think about it. 250 days or nights at the top of the Premier League, and then to go ahead and just you know, not be able to win it because City just come from behind and take it away. It's a lot to do with when Pep came in. When he first came in, I remember reading the first meeting that he had with his team was an in-depth analysis of the way they used to play under Manuel Pellegrini, from whom he took over the team. And it's there where he didn't point out their mistakes, but showed them how good they are when they are together, collective as a unit. And that's Pep's mantra, right? Like, he's like, take the ball, pass the ball, take the ball, pass the ball. And he's built a system around him where he's been able to bring in players and just slot them in. Manuel Akanji, third or fourth choice center back for Borussia Dortmund, right? He brought him in. The man has fit directly into his system because he buys systems players who fit his systems. And he's built like a behemoth of a bench where he can just bring on people and just keep switching between people. So I feel like where Arsenal lost out this time was obviously we didn't have the squad depth, to be honest. Arsenal as a team gave it everything, absolutely overachieved, I think, past what anybody thought they could do, for which you have to give them, you know, the respect that they deserve. But if they want to take it all the way next season, they have to, you know, go into the transfer market and increase their squad depth the way Rusha was saying. They are making good moves, whether it's Declan Rice, hopefully, or Moises Caicedo, or João Cancelo himself, or even Ilkay Gundogan, for example, right? If they're able to bring in, you know, maybe even two or even three, for that matter, of these people, I feel like they will be able to carry it forward, because the only thing they lacked this time was squad depth, because as soon as William Saliba was gone, it was bye-bye Premier League.
Oh, fair point. You know, it's, you know, as you pointed out, it's a daunting task, you know, especially with the resources Pep has and with the kind of manager he is. But even keeping those things in mind, Advait, you've been following City for such a long time. You understood their systems. And, you know, Pep in his press conference said yesterday that just because we won the Champions League doesn't mean we forget the five Premier League titles that we won. Where does this Champions League rank for Pep, you think, and for this Manchester City side? Is this really their greatest achievement, or is this something that is just a relief point, you know, for the club and their management?
I think Pep Guardiola's Champions League win is pretty similar to Messi's World Cup win. It's like we knew that both of them are the greatest at what they do. Pep is the greatest manager and Messi is the greatest player, but it's always something that the opposing side will have on them, that Messi never won the World Cup. Messi never won the World Cup like Maradona did or like Pelé did. And the same way, like, Pep Guardiola couldn't win the Champions League with all the billions of pounds that he had to spend with Man City. Everyone knows that they're the greatest at what they do. They've proven it time and again. But it's just, you know, the crowning jewel needed just to cap off their careers. And it's just poetic that it's happened 6 months within each other. So in the list of achievements that Guardiola has done, I believe winning five Premier League titles in 6 years is a greater achievement than winning this Champions League. I believe that what we have seen, even with West Ham winning the Conference League, or, you know, seeing Sevilla winning the Europa League, what often happens is if you play a narrow style of play, you hit fast on the counter-attack and you defend compact, you can win the Champions League, you can win these cup competitions, because it's a matter of holding off for one or two games. Of course, it's a great achievement. I'm not playing it down. But to play a sustainable brand of football over 38 game weeks, to keep that level of concentration for 8 to 9 months, and to do it with the same group of players like Guardiola has done with just two or three huge additions every summer, and, you know, just keep the same principles, make small nuanced changes to your tactics, I think that is a greater achievement of Guardiola's work than anything he's done before. I'm not even talking about Barcelona, because I believe, like, you cannot talk about the 2008 Barcelona, what Guardiola did there, the football that they played. I believe that's the greatest football team of all time. But as far as City is concerned, I believe winning five Premier League titles is a greater achievement. They were also the first team to win the domestic treble in England. Not even Sir Alex Ferguson's United had won a domestic treble before that. And now he's also the second English team to win the treble after Sir Alex Ferguson's United. So it's an absolutely amazing achievement, but I don't think it's his greatest achievement as City manager. Just the work that he's done over the last 6 years, it's just been absolutely ridiculous, winning like four Carabao Cups in a row, or two FA Cups, one Champions League, five Premier Leagues. It's absolutely insane. And he's already created a legacy in England that, you know, like, not just restricted to the silverware, but I mean, even when you read League Two managers' interviews, they say that we continuously watch City and we are trying to learn how we can use our goalkeeper in build-up. like the leaders of the league too, the manager said in an interview that the reason behind our success is that we started using the goalkeeper as 11th man in build-up and not just restricting the shot-stopping, and that's actually given us an advantage in the league. So his influence is way more than just silverware. It's like he's come into football, and it's very simple that from the start he said, I'm not going to wait for the opponents to start playing football. I'm going to come in, and from minute one, I'm going to play the football that I want. I'm going to step foot on the gas, and I'm going to put authority on the game. I'm going to dominate all the games. And like his assistant manager, Dominic Torrent, said that to actually understand the changes Guardiola makes, you have to be so into football. You have to analyze games so deeply. Because if you zoom out and watch, you think all Guardiola sides play the same kind of football, possession base. They continuously pass the ball around. They try to hit compact. They defend compact. But to actually know the kind of changes he makes, like Bernardo Silva said that every game Guardiola makes a change or two that we have no idea about before he actually starts training us for it. So every game, there are small changes that he makes, that he points out. And, you know, it's just so much of analysis, so much concentration. And like I mentioned on one of the episodes earlier, that was one of the reasons why he left Barcelona, because it was his daughter's ballet show. And Guardiola was actually into his 13th hour of analyzing Athletic Bilbao season when he realized that he's gotten so much into football that it needs to stop. He's not able to prioritize his family and not able to see anything. Actually, I was reading this article which said that Guardiola analyzed Benfica's football so much to take ideas from them that he actually injured his back. Because that's how long he sat just reading about Benfica and watching Benfica play. So that's the kind of level of detail that Guardiola goes into. Just like, you know, there's so much focus on data, so much focus on analysis, and a lot of focus on his gut as well. You know, something really interesting that I found out yesterday was that while City have an insane sports science department, Guardiola makes a lot of rotation calls based on his interpretation of players' body language. When you think about how ridiculous that is, Guardiola's lot of his rotation is based on how he thinks the players are responding in terms of their attitude towards him, in terms of their conversation with him, how they're reacting to other players' conversations and dialogues. And you can just tell that he's such an intelligent man, not just from the footballing point of view, but, you know, this the empathetic side of him. Like, you know, like obviously Zlatan might have something to say about that, but on the whole, Kyle Walker even went as far as saying that Guardiola is the best man manager he's ever had, even better than Mauricio Pochettino, who was supposed to be an excellent man manager by players from Southampton, Tottenham, even players from PSG said that Poch really manages players well. But Walker went as far as saying Pep is the best man manager he's ever had. And, you know, I'm sure Pep had something to say to him about his job yesterday. And I'm sure Walker even understood it. He said that he's going to drink every bit of alcohol he sees on the floor yesterday. So, I mean, it's all good at City. And I think Pep, what he's created is just insanely special. It hurts me to say this as a United fan, but this City is the greatest English side to play football on English soil. And Pep is definitely the greatest manager of all time.
Just going off of that, one thing when he was talking about how Pep is not just, you know, Pep is very easily categorized as like this brilliant tactician, which he obviously is. But people then sometimes neglect the other parts of his management. And just the one thing I want to say is that I remember Spalletti, the now ex-Napoli coach, spoke about how he was talking about winners and about how winners find it very difficult to enjoy the wins. Like, you see Pep yesterday after the finals, like he wasn't like losing his mind. He was very calm. When he was on CBS and they asked him, how are you feeling? He said he feels tired and he feels calm and he feels relaxed. And it's like, you know, he wasn't even like over like jubilant or like just over expressing. He was very calm. He was very okay about it. And we've seen this happen with Pep so many times. He'll have won like the most important game of his life, and then he'll be pulling Raheem Sterling to the side and like giving him instructions. Like, we've seen this so many times. Like, we know this about Pep, that he clearly, after one win, it's just go on to the next win. You see this so often with serial winners. Again, for like our Indian audiences, like when Mahendra Singh Dhoni just won the IPL right now with Chennai Super Kings, you didn't even see him smile. Like, he barely like showed any emotion. Like, it was just like, you know, job's done, next thing. So it's like these kind of personalities and individuals, you see like how Advait was alluding to like his like obsession. It's like he's so obsessed with winning that he can't even enjoy the wins entirely, which again is just a testament to how deep he is into the sport and into his tactics.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, that's excellent. Rushabh, we want to address this thing about Pep. He's a winning machine. And, you know, nobody knows that better, you know, than Barca fans. He's won more than, trophies you can, you know, more trophies than you can imagine, more trophies than, you know, that can be played even at Barcelona. He has, you know, a trophy cabinet, you know, littered with silverware. But, you know, coming to you, Rohin, what did that feel like, you know, just to sort of draw parallels to, you know, that Barcelona side where they really won everything there was to win? What does it feel like after one point when you're winning everything? Does that put the manager under more expectation? Is there more pressure, or do you just, are you just happy that he's a part of your institution? What is the feeling, or what was the feeling when you had that Barcelona?
So there's this really funny thing I said to myself yesterday. It was Pep Guardiola makes the cooler inside me weep, basically, when I look at him, because everything he embodies is absolutely everything we expect from the behemoth that is FC Barcelona. Like the history, the way we play, everything, the way you hold yourself in public, he embodies everything. I started watching Barca in 2003 when I was about 6.5 years old, to be exact. And to be honest, when it started, it was all about just because they play fun football to watch. Because when you're young, you're like, oh, they play good football, it's fun to watch. And just moving through the years, I mean, with Messi coming in, with that 2006 Champions League win, you know, everything was on the up, but we still weren't at a stage like, you know, where we could just come out and be like, we're the best team in the world. And then you cut to Pep Guardiola coming in and winning a sextuple in his first season. I mean, it was almost like we didn't have any words to describe it, but it felt like home. It felt like one of our own has come in and just created something so special and so great, like with somebody who was going to be the greatest player of all time and him himself at some point going to be the greatest manager of all time. So, I mean, if we want to draw comparisons to between that Barcelona team and this Manchester City team, I think it's a little preliminary in that sense, just considering they are the most dominant team in England. There's no denying that. They have shown it over the past 3 or 4 seasons, and probably over the past 2 or 3 seasons, they have been the best team in the world, right? But it also needs to translate to European dominance as a whole. And I feel like the way Barca dominated Europe in that 4 or 5 years that Pep was there, to be precise, I don't think there was anyone like that. And it remains to be seen if City can do that. But in that 2011 final, when they just ripped through United, like, United was just there to make up the numbers on the field that day. Barca played football. Like, the only football was played by 11 people on that pitch. And I feel like to repeat that in a Champions League final is something that remains to be seen. That Real performance by City came very, very close to emulating something like that. But when you come to a Champions League final, when you have the burden of a club like FC Barcelona with so much history on your back, and then to still be able to perform at that, you know, at that level and get your team to perform and have them inspired at that level, I think is really, really big. And yeah, like, you know, how Arbet said that, you know, why Pep left Barca. It is the pressure that comes with being at a club like FC Barcelona, right? The more you win, the more is expected of you. It's like, okay, you won this much. You need to either keep winning this much, which is the sextuple, or if you won like a treble, you need to win a treble and more next season. Like, you know, and it's like, you ask any Barca fan this, a Champions League semi-final exit is a disgraceful season. We don't care. The La Liga's won, great. The Copa del Rey's won, great. That's required. That's not something we need to tell you. But a Champions League semi-final exit is not a good season at all. And I feel like Pep embodied that for the amount of time he was there. I was really sad to see him go. But he's gone on to create something at Manchester City, which is going to help them in the future. Because just adding to what was already said about Manchester City, Pep has, he's done almost a La Masia for them. I mean, I'm not going to say at that scale. But he's given them a base that they can build off from. They can move forward over the years with people like Phil Foden, Cole Palmer, all these guys just coming out of their academy, you know. And just to compare, PSG has a lot of money too, but we don't see the same kind of success translating into their football. And that's a lot to do with Pep, Chicky, and all these guys that have come in the background. and the way they're building a brand of football, the way Barca has a brand of football. And I feel like that's what's going to lead them further into the next generation, even once he decides to leave.
No, fantastic. I think, you know, that, you know, the greatness of Pep sort of translates into every club that he touches. You know, you see his influence wherever he goes. And, you know, Rushabh, I think that brings me to a very important question. And I think that's something that's been hovering in my mind for, you know, ever since yesterday, which is, where does this Man City's team really stand, you know, in the pantheon of great teams? Do you compare it to, you know, the Madrids and the Uniteds and the Arsenal's Invincibles and so forth? Do they make the cut? Do they not?
I think, so obviously, before I say anything, it has to be made very clear that these conversations are in some way very futile. Like, it's such a subjective question. Obviously, you can put numbers to it, which is what I'm going to try to do in a couple of minutes. But there is just so much subjectivity here about, you know, what people like and what, you know, personal preference, what you like to see, what you don't like to see. So I want everyone to keep that in mind. And then, yes, before I go into the numbers, which is because I've done a bit of the background work there, but I want to say that, just to start off, I want to talk about recency bias. I think recency bias is something that we all suffer from. And even if you forget all the other biases, you know, my biases as a United fan and as someone who's not a big fan of City, despite the kind of football they play, I think it's important for all of us to be aware of our potential recency bias when we're making any claims about anything, especially any all-time claims. Like, I absolutely love Rohan's passion, but he's gotten a bit carried away there. He's gone La Masia in Man City, and his second name was Cole Palmer. I mean, Rohan, I think that's a bit too far. I see the point you're making, but come on, I think that's a bit too far. But my point is that I think emotions are running very high right now, especially, you know, off the back of such a historic win, a Champions League, a treble. Pep has waited almost a decade, more than a decade for this. So I understand all of that. And I also understand my recency bias here, or like my bias in general. But again, before I get into the numbers, I'm going to caveat a few points to begin with. Nimai's question obviously was, how do you compare this with the pantheon of other great teams? I'm going to assume here that a treble is the greatest achievement a team can do. Again, there's a lot of argument to be had there. Maybe, you know, there are teams that haven't won a treble, but it could be a part of this conversation. But for the sake of this, study, I'm going to assume only treble winning teams. And I'm only looking 1992 onwards, which is obviously when the European Cup rebranded to the Champions League. Which the reasons for that are mainly because I wasn't able to find enough stats for the trebles that happened before that. And I would like to think that in the grand scheme of things, the modern era of the game is post-1992. And again, comparing between eras is always just a very difficult thing to do. So that then leaves us with seven teams to look at. We have this year's City team. We have Sir Alex's United in 98-99. We have two Barcelona teams, Pep's in 08-09 and Enrique's in 14-15. And we have two Bayern teams, the Jupp Heynckes team in 12-13 and the team in 1920. Oh my God, the manager's, his name is escaping me. Hansi Flick's 1920. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Nimai. And obviously, just Jose Mourinho's Inter. And lastly, before I go into the numbers, these are very basic numbers. I'm sure there are a lot more deeper dives people can do into, you know, just in order to make conclusions about which teams are more dominant and have a better playing style. So these are very basic numbers. But looking into these basic, very basic numbers, let me say right out the gate that I do not think that this Man City side are the greatest European treble team of all time. I'm glad I drew that conclusion so that at least we have a bit of a foil for what the rest of the guys are saying. I see the arguments, and if we're being completely honest, it's very, 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 very difficult to find other teams that are better than City. But I will say the numbers aren't necessarily in City's favor, which obviously is not the be-all and end-all. But if you look at the stats, the Jupp Heynckes Barca had a higher win percentage. Jupp Heynckes Bayern, sorry, had a higher win percentage. Luis Enrique's Barcelona had more goals scored and conceded per game more goals scored and fewer goals conceded per game than City do. Then in terms of intangibles, like the average age of the squad, the most recent Bayern team to win the treble, 1920, and the United team have, you know, by far the lowest average age. Even if you account for inflation, Man City's team is the most expensively assembled team out of all of these. And so I think, you know, just like a few of those stats, for the most part, out of win percentage, number of losses, goals scored and conceded, goal difference, money spent, average age, in any of these categories, City don't top the list. It's one of the other treble winners. So my only reason for bringing up all these stats is that, again, these statistics are influenced by so many things. With Bundesliga teams, you always want to take the Bundesliga tax. And, you know, you have so many things to consider with the money spent. Yes, City spent a lot of money, but what they've created with that money, no other team has been able to create with a similar amount of money, you know, like your PSGs, like your Man Uniteds, like your, you know, like other teams like that. But the only reason I want to bring this up is that in all of these metrics, City don't seem to top the list. Is that maybe we need to be a bit more aware of just, again, not falling prey to recency bias. Like I said, and I will wrap up shortly, but I think this is a very futile argument. I think there is an objective way of looking at it, which is what I've tried. But at the end of the day, there's so many, you know, just so many rebuttals to this. Like, what is the best treble or the best team? Is it the one with the best numbers? Is it the one that had the most clutch or exciting moments? Because then you'd probably go United. Is it the one that, you know, some people believe that the greatest teams are the ones that the street will remember. And although Inter Milan are basically rock bottom at all of the metrics that we discussed earlier, there's probably no UCL run as iconic, or that provided as many iconic moments as that Inter win. You know, Sergio Busquets peeking to see, you know, if his dive has worked out, the red card, Mourinho going and whispering in Pep's ear, all of that. Like, all of that is just so iconic and so typical street football. It genuinely, I think, does come down to personal preference. You can find two equally passionate and intelligent football fans, one of whom will say, I prefer Mourinho's Inter, and one of whom will say, I prefer Pep City. I think the final point I'll make before I conclude is that all of these trebles are, and all of these achievements and teams are beautiful representations of their clubs and managers at that point in time, some of whom are the most legendary ever. So, you know, you have Barca playing the style of football that is so uniquely theirs. You have Bayern being just utterly and painfully dominant. You have Inter and Mourinho probably, like I said, having the streets like no other. You have United's team that continued in the ways of Busby, sticking to a philosophy that has, you know, that put them on the map, which is trusting kids and giving them a chance. And now finally, we have a new team that's joined that list, and that's Man City. Perhaps the most difficult team to beat tactically, and like Adweb was alluding to earlier, to beat in terms of consistency for how long they've been this good. You know, that is City's the most standout feature about them, the fact that they are just so difficult to beat consistently. But more importantly, the other thing that stands out about City, and like I said, is a representation of City's treble, is that we can look past it if we want, but it is perhaps the most expensive and illegally assembled team of all time. After all, that is the Man City way. Okay, no, in all seriousness though, I know this is fueled a bit by bitterness, but it is very difficult to deny that City's achievements are and will be slightly tainted until these various allegations that have been held against them over the years find a suitable conclusion. If we are looking at it from a pure footballing point of view, you just ignore all that stuff. But I don't think it is fair as us as football fans, you know, try to stand for what's right, to just not mention at all that there are concerns about how City have done what they've done. Not to take it away from the players or from Pep, but I think that is always going to be there unless they find, like I said, a suitable conclusion. I went on for a bit there, but like I said, I think this is a very futile argument, but City are by far one of the greats. I would just hesitate from being very sure in saying they are the best.
I think I have to second you with that. I do not think this City team is the greatest. They're up there. They are a really, really good team. They are dominant. And like, you know, just bringing up those charges that they have on them, like, you know, again, maybe just to echo you, but I don't believe it's enough for me to look at this City team and be like, you know, I have to diminish what they've achieved, even to a certain extent. I understand as football fans, we do obviously need to know what's going on, and we do hope everything that's going on is above board and there's no issues. But I don't think that should really affect the footballing standpoint. And just for me, and this is again, like, it's very personal, like you said, it's all subjective, right? It's just personally, it's the way they play their football. And I feel like it's, you know, like it echoes to a certain extent the way Barca used to play that football, or still do play that football. And that's just Pep. But I feel like they have done really, really well. And even if these charges are approved, I would not diminish their footballing aspect at any point. If I mean, there are a lot of things we will have to blame and look at and be like, how is something like this even been allowed to happen? But the footballing side of it is something I would not diminish at all. And also to come back to that La Masia point, I wasn't obviously trying to say that they are even close to being that, but I feel like he's laid a foundation for them maybe 20 or 30 years down the line to maybe try and have something even remotely close to what, like what La Masia is today. Because as a Barca fan, La Masia is everything to me, especially with the financial stuff that's happening right now. Like, we have to keep spawning these guys for us to be relevant in European football. But yeah, I mean, I feel like Pep can lay that foundation for them to take their academy to the next level, especially just comparing these two guys, PSG and Man City. Like, just comparing the two of them, they both have a lot of money, but there's one of them who's performing at a different level and they have young players that they are coming up with. But with PSG, we don't see as much. So I just feel like that was something I wanted to bring up.
No, I think that's good. You know, and you know, that leads us to an important question, you know, and Advait, I think, you know, you've sort of done a fair bit of reading, especially, you know, the stuff coming out of, you know, The Athletic with Kraft and Emily and so forth. And, you know, there was an interesting debate in one of The Athletic podcasts recently where Crafton was, you know, sort of on the side of Rushab, or sort of leaning on Rushab's side of things, where he said that you cannot separate the football from the allegations. They have to go hand in hand. They're sort of, they're not mutually exclusive. Sam Lee, on the other hand, said that it's not about the allegation, it's not about the money. It really is about Pep. So, what do you think? Which side do you lean on? Do you think it's Pep? Do you think it's the money? Do you think it's Mansoor? Where do you lean on this?
So I think it definitely comes down to a lot of factors. You cannot just attribute the success of a club to just one factor. It is obviously that Pep Guardiola has had a lot of money to spend. So have a lot of clubs. Like, I'm a huge Manchester United fan, but we've also had billions of dollars to spend, and our net spend is pretty similar to City since Pep Guardiola took over. It's also about how you spend the money. Like Rohin mentioned, that with guys like Zicky coming in, the kind of culture that they created at the club, they have a system in place. They buy players that are perfectly suited to Pep's system, buying players like John Stones, Manuel Akanji, who are distributive centre-backs, buying a goal-scoring forward like Erling Haaland, buying wide players like Jack Grealish, who drift in and can get into central spaces. It's just a lot of these factors, buying a player like Rodri, who replicates Busquets' role in Pep's Barca. They've bought perfect players, they have a perfect system in place, the team is united. The culture is amazing. It's just a lot of factors backing from the top. Khaldun is just so involved in the football side of things. We rarely see people who are at the helm of things being so involved in day-to-day decision-making, but Khaldun is. They treat Guardiola like an absolute god in Manchester. They give him everything. They cut grass to the millimeter that Guardiola wants, 3 millimeters to be exact, and wet grass. He gets every single thing that he wants because everyone in that club is committed to Guardiola's thinking, Guardiola's philosophy, how to play football, how to run a football club. It's Guardiola from head to toe. Zicky handles the transfer business brilliantly according to Guardiola's needs. They've given Guardiola all the power. He understands his responsibility and he's done a bloody good job at it. Additionally, I think because of the whole Guardiola narrative, players do not get enough credit. But City's players have done a fantastic job year after year. There are so many players who play on the bench, get rotated season after season, get rotated for half the season. But still, when they're asked to step in, they come in and do an absolutely amazing job. So the players need to get credit as well. I think City is a well-oiled machine. City is a fantastically run football club. City have a fantastic football manager. You know, yesterday I saw the kit man running and hugging Pep Guardiola, assistant coaches, hugging Pep Guardiola, hugging the players as if he's one of them. That just symbolizes everything that Guardiola wanted. And actually, relating back to the first point that Rohin made, that he's trying to bring togetherness at City, and he's achieved that. When the kit man's coming out running and hugging everyone as if he scored the winning goal in the UCL final, it's togetherness. They're a well-oiled machine. They're here to stay for years and years, and Guardiola's created something very, very special.
No, and you know, that's a good place for us to wrap it up today. You know, it's been an incredible season, you know, crowned by, you know, Pep Guardiola returning to, you know, the pinnacle of football. It's been quite extraordinary. Thank you once again for listening. And before we go, we have one last quiz question, which I'm going to throw it out to, you know, our two remaining guests. There is one player if you guys can give this a shot. There is only one player who has won two Champions Leagues, both in Istanbul, for two different clubs, without playing a single minute.
Scott Carson.
It does look like, okay, I think Rowan's got it. Okay, it does look like it's Scott Carson. Which I want that answer to. Okay, so Scott Carson, it is. What an incredible man. Hasn't played a minute, but did win the Champions League with Liverpool in 2005 and then in Man City again yesterday. But yeah, that brings us to the end of our fresh new series. We'll be back next week, or maybe earlier this week, with fresh new episodes, new analysis, coverage of new clubs, fresh new content, and keep us in your ears, keep it coming, and keep giving us feedback. Thank you once again.
It's been a pleasure, and goodbye from the Football Road Podcast.